here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome back to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. My name is Ryan McQueenie. I'm an associate stock strategist here at Zach's Investment Research, joined by one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello. Today is Friday, January 18th. January's almost over.
Flying by.
Thank God, really. And we're here to recap this week's biggest stories from the investment and financial world. The New Year rally continued this week. As solid bank earnings and further stabilization kept investors in a good mood throughout the week, even if one tech bellwether's report wasn't quite what Wall Street had hoped it would be.
That's right. Today we've got everything from those bank reports you mentioned to a full dive into Netflix's earnings results, as well as a look at a busy stretch for deal making in the cannabis industry. That's all coming up later on today's show.
Yeah, but first, we want to take a bit of a kind of a somber start as we reflect on the legacy of a storied investor, Jack Bogle.
Yes, Jack Bogle, full name John C. Bogle, the father of the index fund and founder of the Vanguard Group, passed away at the age of 89 on Wednesday. Bogle was a champion of the low-cost buy-and-hold investing strategy and helped individual investors track indexes without worrying about high manager fees. Vanguard was formed in 1974 and began functioning the next year. I was reading a bit about the formation and kind of the start of index fund investing. Basically, when Bogle founded Vanguard, they came up with this index fund, and then there was no competitive index fund company for 10 years. So it was a slow grind.
So he was the only player.
Yeah, it was a slow grind to even, because now like there's more index funds and ETFs than there are publicly traded companies in the U.S. So it seems like something that has always been very popular. But for almost a decade, it was just the Vanguard Group in town, basically. So it took a while for this to catch on. But now it's huge. Investors have put in nearly $5.3 trillion into just Vanguard funds. And the company remains well known for its passive index funds and low expense ratios to this day. Bogle's approach to investing was very simple. Consider index funds, keep a diverse portfolio comprising stocks as well as mutual funds, and don't be bothered about the broader market. Think long-term, stay invested, and ignore the noise, was Bogle's philosophy. One of these people who just said, don't worry about trying to beat the market, just follow the market if you can, and here are the tools you need to do that. Bogle also loved dividends. He famously taught that in the 20th century, out of the stock market's 9.6% return, 4.5% came from dividend growth, and just 5% came from earnings growth. And so we will conclude by saying Bogle will no doubt be remembered as a hero of the individual investor. Just made things a lot more accessible and easier for average folks like us.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good investing outlook.
Absolutely.
And I feel like something to follow, especially looking back on the recent volatility and probably continued volatility. There's always volatility, but especially the recent bout that we experienced.
Absolutely. And the Vanguard Group will live on as a great option for anyone looking for index funds, and one that I can guarantee you probably have some exposure to in your 401k.
Absolutely.
So, if you're one who dives into the full 401k statement you get every quarter, but which I do. But moving on here, we're going to get into the kind of industry news from the week, and we're going to start with the financials, start with the big banks.
Yeah, J.P. Morgan. Was one of the bigger ones. We'll get to that in a quick second. But so we got earnings results from basically everyone, all the big banks, the big U.S. banks this week. And by and large, the story was the same. Q4 volatility took a chunk out of things like fixed income trading revenue, but other key business segments kind of made up for it. So this was especially evident in the major consumer investment hybrid banks. Citigroup saw earnings of $1.61 per share, and that topped the Zacks consensus by 6 cents. Revenues at Citi were a bit light, as those pesky fixed income revenues were down 21%. However, cost-cutting initiatives and decent results in consumer banking were enough to keep investors happy. But JP Morgan missed. They missed EPS estimates for the first time in 15 quarters.
Crazy.
Ah, if only, like, what a streak, man.
Yeah.
But otherwise looked fine. So earnings did grow 85% year over year on 7% higher revenues. Investment banking fees and credit card sales volume helped lift results for JP Morgan this quarter. And I will tell you, whenever I go into my local, not my local Chase, but whenever there's a Chase close to the Zacks office in the Chicago Loop, probably many Chases close to our office, and one that I go to by my apartment up in Lakeview. They're always pushing me to open a credit card. And I already have a Chase Freedom credit card. They're always like, you know, you have some offers mm-hmm. on the table. And mm-hmm. I'm like, guys, I don't need another credit card. That credit card sales volume lift, not surprising to me.
Well, it is interesting that we're still seeing healthy results with credit cards because I feel like people have been saying, well, rising interest rates, they're going to really put a dent in all this free money that everybody's been handing out. I think you still look, interest rates are still historically low.
And I
think these banks are still happy to give out cards at pretty decent interest rates for the consumers. So, you know, interesting that JP Morgan's still with solid results there.
Mm-hmm. Bank of America, another big bank reporting this week, they delivered earnings of 70 cents per share, which handily outpaced the Zacks consensus estimate of 63 cents. And that figure was up 49% from the prior year quarter. Wells Fargo also posted a nice earnings beat, although management did say that its Fed-mandated cap on growth would last several months longer than previously expected.
Yeah, I think saying it's going to go through 2019, as recently as December, the CEO had said it wasn't going to last that long, but apparently not. As you mentioned, pretty good results there, at least satisfactory results for the consumer and investment companies. For just the strictly investment behemoths, things were similar. Goldman Sachs saw $6.04 per share in earnings. That just crushed the Zacks consensus, which called for $4.88 per share in earnings. Revenues of about $8.1 billion in the quarter beat estimates as well. And it looks like the biggest chunk of that beat came from the investing and lending division, which includes everything from consumer banking, the upstart Marcus division, to private equity.
I get mail from them all the time.
Yeah, me too. Morgan Stanley was potentially one of the more disappointing of this batch of reports. Earnings of 73 cents per share was far below the 90 cents in the Zacks consensus, but also pales in comparison, minus 13% year over year. Revenues were about $8.5 billion. That was under the estimated $9.4 billion and down 10% year over year. And potentially the biggest question mark here was that the wealth management revenues were down 6%. Most competing firms, including the likes of all the ones we've already mentioned, basically managed to eke out single-digit growth in their wealth management units. So perhaps not great news that Morgan Stanley missed there. The CEO did kind of take an interesting tone in the conference call and said this is not the new normal. This was just a particularly disappointing quarter. So either way, I think when you take a step back and you look at all these names, it was encouraging for investors to hear that even with such a poor fourth quarter for mm-hmm. the broader markets, that these banks in the modern era in 2018 and 2019 are diversified enough and leveraged enough that, you know, they can handle those 2 to 3 month stretches of uncertainty
sure.
just fine. And people who remember the financial crisis, it lasted a little bit longer than that. And a lot of that had to do with banks stretching themselves too thin in certain areas. So with that, though, moving on from the banks to probably the first of the major tech reports, Netflix, which always gets us going. Yeah,
always the first one. So Netflix posted adjusted earnings of 30 cents per share, and this beat our consensus estimate of 24 cents. revenues, while up 27% to $4.2 billion, that was slightly lower than what estimates were calling for, and earnings were down significantly from 89 cents per share last year as it continued to ramp up spending on content. One thing I did want to mention is that when I was reading through the shareholder letter, they obviously had to talk about Bird Box.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of households that had like watched Bird Box was insane. I don't know if it was like up to like 80 million something households. That could be wrong, but it was definitely like up from like that initial 45 million accounts, households that had watched it.
You're talking about almost half of their total subscriber base.
And this
is ridiculous.
Like, despite the Bird Box challenge, people injuring themselves, like Google and Netflix having to be don't do the Bird Box challenge.
No press is bad press.
Exactly. And one thing I did read yesterday is that I guess there's this one scene. At this point, it's not really a spoiler anymore because if you haven't watched Bird Box, you're just dumb.
Yeah.
And where Sandra Bullock's character looks at, like, this is like kind of before everything happens. It's right at the beginning when she like looks at the television and there's this like disaster scene.
Oh yeah, I read about this. Yeah,
and
that's crazy.
It's a real life disaster. And apparently there's this train crash.
Yeah, in Canada.
In Canada back like in 2000.
Yeah.
And like survivors of the crash have come out saying like, you can't, like, that's not right. It's not ethical to use real footage.
Yeah.
And, but apparently like footage of like real crashes, like real disasters like that are like
common.
Common.
Yeah. They just buy them from like B-roll and stock footage companies. And
so
and
I don't
real.
Know.
Yeah.
I don't know like the actual, like if they had like the rights to use that footage, if like, if that footage was like part of like a big like B-roll stock, like library.
Yeah, I read that they bought it as stock footage from a company based in New York that sells stock footage for things.
Okay.
And that unfortunately, oftentimes in disaster movies and like post-apocalyptic movies, when you see that classic cut to the news reporter with the disaster happening, that a lot of the time that is actually real footage that has been purchased by a stock footage company and then licensed to whatever production company used it in the movie. So this one in particular in Canada, like 49 people died in that train accident.
Yeah, it was very tragic.
One of the worst like public disasters in Canada's history. It's like kind of horrible, but
I do think they're taking it out of the movie from what the last I heard.
Yeah, I had heard that there was a Canadian movie, like a movie that was produced in Canada that used the footage, the same footage, and they took it out of that movie.
Oh, okay.
But I had read that Netflix was basically like, no, we're not going to do that.
Maybe it's because Bird Box is like so insanely successful. I don't know.
Yeah, I think also too, I mean, you can be, if you have a connection to the disaster, I think obviously it's tough and it's not something you want to be reminded of and you want to see all the time. But from a business's perspective, they're probably like, well, go complain to the people that we bought this from then, because we bought it and we have the license. So.
Fair enough. Yeah, I just thought that, yeah. But Bird Box is like this like phenomenon and it's not even critically arguably that good of a movie.
Yes, no.
but it was so enjoyable. It was so entertaining.
Absolutely.
Anyways, I just thought I would bring that up because it was just like this funny tidbit of the shareholder letter. I just like that they like to boast about their content offerings.
Yeah, people, I think, are getting skeptical about it too. I was reading something on Twitter yesterday about how people don't believe that 40 million people watched You, the series.
I mean, I actually kind of do believe that, though.
I'm one of the four. If it is,
I am. I watched it
one,
in like
two,
48 hours.
So there's at least two people in this room who watched it. So,
it's,
I mean, we're
so
part of the way
trashy
there.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. I have two more episodes left. I've watched it over the course of 2 days right now.
I mean,
now,
you have like Penn Badgley, the actor who played Dan in Gossip Girl, who ended up is Gossip Girl. So Gossip Girl goes like this like very dark way.
Oh, I didn't even know. I've never seen a single episode of Gossip Girl. So
also a very good show.
The lead guy in You is in?
Yes.
Is in Gossip Girl?
Yeah.
And then, he's also a bad guy in Gossip Girl?
Well, the twist at the end of Gossip Girl is that Dan is Gossip Girl.
oh, it's Gossip Guy the whole time.
Yes.
Wow.
It was like, oh my God.
Spoiler alert, by the way. We should have spit spoiler alert.
I mean, it's the spoiler has been out
Gossip
for like
Girl's been out for like
three,
a decade.
4 years.
Okay,
so
yeah. I was going to say.
It's not really a spoiler alert anymore.
It's years old. Get with the program.
but yeah,
all of this is to say that Netflix is spending a bunch of money on content.
Well, the thing
some
is
good,
with you
bad.
Is that, sorry, I will get back to Netflix stats in like 2 minutes, but You was actually a show on Lifetime.
That's what I heard. Yeah, and like it just wasn't really popular.
And then Netflix somehow, but I think Netflix distributed the show internationally.
Yeah.
So it was always a partner.
Yeah.
And then somehow, and then not because it didn't do that well on Lifetime, Netflix just brought it to their platform, and now it's just, it just has blown up.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it.
Same. Okay, anyways, back to the stats. Netflix, so it did say that it added 8.8 million global paid memberships last quarter, 1.2 million more than estimated, so that's pretty good. This news comes just a few days after the company announced it would raise prices for its streaming service again. That's fine. I probably won't unsubscribe. I think it was like a... For the plan that I'm on, it was like $11 to $13.
Yeah, and if you look in the past, this has basically had... The previous price hikes have had basically no effect on subscriber retention or growth. That said, this is the largest... That accounts for the largest price hike since they launched the streaming platform part of it.
I mean, if it goes like $13 to $15, I may...
Wow, now we're at a level where we're questioning
because
it.
Like that's like HBO Now. That's like HBO Now level of content.
Yeah, I think the return on the like it's still definitely a no-brainer.
$13, absolutely.
To watch you. Yeah, honestly.
So looking ahead, Netflix projects that its Q1 revenues will climb by 21%. But that's below the Zacks consensus estimate calling for revenue growth of 24%. The company does expect to see negative free cash flow of $3 billion this year. But that's right in line with what it saw in 2018. Shares slumped about 3.2% in after-hours trading yesterday. And despite rallying into the open, the stock was down about that much through the first half hour of today's session.
Yeah, so we'll watch Netflix as we go on. We should have some more. We have some more tech reports next week. We got like IBM and Intel coming in next week. Texas Instruments, so we'll get some chips as well going. And then from there, the fangs really kick off over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Netflix always one of the early fangs. This is kind of a weird calendar of the year because the big banks that we all recapped, typically most of them come in on a Friday morning. And
that's
then
true.
The following week, you get like the investment companies and
the banks did Thursday morning.
It was spread out throughout the week. Typically, it's the whole chunk of those consumer investment hybrids all coming in on the
one
same
day,
and it's Friday morning.
Right.
But it was like Citigroup on Monday, JP Morgan on Tuesday.
I wonder if it's because
Bank of
what happened
Wednesday.
In the last, like the volatility at the end of
last quarter. Yeah, I don't know exactly. It could be that, or it could have just been the calendar. Maybe just in my experience, it's been on Friday mornings, and it actually
it's
fluctuates.
Usually always on Friday mornings.
So we have a slightly strange Q4 calendar, is what my point. But besides earnings reports, I do want to talk about one other story. That I think was
a little
bunch of
green plant.
Yes, a bunch of individual stories that I think when you took a step back, it was one big story. And there's a whole heck of a lot of cannabis industry deal making going on this week. And it seems like most of it is a direct response to the hemp legalization and potentially the opening of a very legal nationwide CBD market in the United States. So we'll try to run through this. I'll try to organize it based off of CBD and potentially just a different type of deal. We'll start with Canopy Growth on Monday received a license from the state of New York, which is a state here in the United States of America.
Is it?
Yes,
I
one of the bigger
that.
Ones. It's going to allow the Canadian company to process and produce hemp in the state. Canopy is going to invest up to $150 million in the location. And it hopes that facility will be able to produce tons of hemp on an annual basis once it gets up and running. They haven't decided on a location yet, but it is going to be in the southern tier of New York. And they credited Governor Cuomo and Senator Schumer for their initiatives. I believe the state of New York is heading towards cannabis legalization through the legislature soon, whereas Senator Schumer was integral in getting the hemp legalization the farm bill. Then we also had Tilray, another one of these Canadian producers, announced this week that it is entering a long-term revenue-sharing partnership to market and distribute cannabis-based products with authentic brands. This is one of those strange marketing brand ownership brand, we'll buy your brand and revive it, but we can also do deals and like market with you types of companies. It owns Shoe Brands, Nine West, Airwalk, and Tree Torn. I believe it also owns ski wear company called Spider. If you've ever skied or snowboarded, that might be on your radar.
Sure.
But basically, it will be responsible for putting things like CBD into authentic brands' products where that would work. So they have got some like lip balms and some ointments and stuff like that.
So no like CBD dispenser in my Nine West heels.
I don't think so. I don't know how that would work, but maybe.
You never know what the future holds.
Maybe they could do like a top sole that is like slowly, as you're stepping on it, releases CBD into the bottom of your foot.
So if I'm wearing heels and they start becoming painful in the arches, and it just slowly releases and eliminates the pain.
Yes. That's my idea. I don't know if they are thinking the same thing.
I mean, we need to get a patent on that immediately.
We could call. I think there's some number we could call for authentic brands that could do it for us. but anyway, so that was an interesting one. I think the basic structure is Tilray is going to pay authentic brands $100 million up front, up to $250 million in cash and stock based off of performance milestones. In return, Authentic Brands is going to pay them back at least $10 million over the next 10 years. So from Tilray's perspective, worst case scenario, 10 years from now, we get the original investment back.
Okay.
Best case scenario, this thing takes off like a rocket and they've got a U.S.-based CBD product all over the place, which is good for them. The other CBD deal that got announced was Wednesday. A company called New Age Beverages announced an agreement to develop and distribute Marley-branded cannabis-infused beverages in conjunction with another company called Docklight Brands. New Age Beverages, if you don't know the ticker, is NBEV. They make all sorts of fun, hip, modern drinks and want to be this big CBD company. This was the first step in expanding that empire. And those are the three that I think are clearly the U.S. just legalized hemp. We can do hemp-based CBD in the U.S. now. Let's get in there. Let's get going. Let's get deals done. Let's get moving on entering that market. We also had some big news in the Canadian market. Aurora Cannabis announced Monday that it is acquiring British Columbia-based Whistler Medical Marijuana for about $132 million American dollars. I think that's like $175 Canadian dollars. $175 million Canadian dollars.
Yes.
Whistler is a pretty recognizable brand in Canada and received one of the country's original 10 licenses to produce medical marijuana. Was also the first cannabis company to earn organic certification in Canada. So it's an organic
pot. That is important.
Brand. Yes.
I'm a Whole Foods shopper.
Yeah, I wonder if that's Whole 30 compliant.
I do care about organic things.
Whistler also is internationally exposed right now. It already sells medical cannabis derivatives to Australia and the Cayman Islands. So this is a good move for Aurora to get it kind of a footing in several international markets. So all of a sudden, just a few weeks after the hemp gets legalized in the U.S., and as we continue to see a lot of interest in these cannabis stocks, everybody's spending money, everybody's teaming up with people, everybody's getting into new markets, everybody's looking to do something. And I think this was a very natural next step. I think the why in a lot of this is the hemp legalization, and the why in a lot of this is the amount of money that has poured in investments. The question would be, so far, all of these are the Canadian pure plays or the CBD pure plays making, in the grand scheme of thing, relatively small deals with other small companies to team up and produce things. In Canopy Growth's case, investing $150 million in a facility, a big chunk of change for them, but in the grand scheme of things, not a huge, huge groundbreaking deal. My question would be, how long does it take till we get to the next phase of this, which would be, to me, tobacco and alcohol companies coming in and just outright buying these companies? And we've seen, you know, the likes of Constellation Brands, Altria, come in and make equity investments in some of these brands. But I think as we talk about the story of, like, we're going to wait out the companies that suck and we're going to get some really good segment leaders here. Mm-hmm. At what point do the people who have been doing the kind of sin industry stuff for decades and decades and decades just come in and just slice off a bit of growth for themselves by making a big deal? Maybe it won't happen. I don't know. I'm speculating, obviously, but it seems like this phase makes sense that we're going through this right now. As these smaller companies figure out what they want to do. And then it seems like the next phase might be the big, huge dogs come in and they say, well, we like what you've done.
Isn't that how it always goes?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Exactly. So you have like the big tobacco players coming in. You have the big alcohol. I mean, you're seeing it now. Even with the random just beverage kings,
yeah,
PepsiCo and yeah, Coca-Cola, who are still very hesitant,
yeah,
about even dipping their toes into this whole world,
mm-hmm,
because of the whole the legalization,
right
issue, yeah. Which, to be fair,
it makes sense, yeah,
it makes sense.
it's not a huge mystery as to why they're hesitant, yeah,
but in the end, money talks,
yeah, absolutely.
And they're a business and they run a huge international business. All of these big players do. And when there's potential to make more money.
Right.
You have to have some serious conversations.
There's the thing about companies like that, whether it be the soft drink companies like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or the beer companies or alcohol companies or the tobacco companies, we're basically at a point in all of those businesses where there is no more growth just doing what you have been doing.
Yeah.
You can only
reinvent Coca-Cola, yeah, exactly, so many times.
Yes. And they're in every market that they're going to be in, and they have these international presences and whatnot. So at some point you have to go buy growth if you want to keep growing. And this seems like the logical thing to purchase if you're going to search for growth right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I would think we'll see that eventually, but it's interesting, as you said, yes, because it does always happen like this. And I think we're all new, and this is all new and fascinating for people, the fact that it's happening with cannabis. But if you look at just the trend of how young industries start to grow and mature and flourish, like it's not something that we can't take notes from other industries that have gone on through the same thing.
Yeah.
To me, it's reminiscent of what we saw with like fast casual restaurants. It's reminiscent of what we saw with cloud computing companies, which are in a lot of ways just now getting to that point where the big tech behemoths come in and, yes, just buy them outright. And we'll see if that's what happens with cannabis. But it was a quick week. It was like every morning this week there was another deal, another ticker trending, yeah, in this industry, because they just went out and splashed some cash. So we'll keep an eye on all of those. Keep an eye on Netflix and the rest of the big banks as we move forward, and then all of the other earnings reports we're bound to get next week and in the following weeks. If you want us to cover one in particular, or if you thought we missed something today, shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. You can also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. If you prefer to get your shows on places like SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, we're also there. Check us out. Thanks again for joining us. Have a nice weekend. We'll see you next time on Zach's Friday Finish Line.